All right, starting with his coverage of the largest tornado in Kansas history, legendary correspondent, anchorman, and producer Bill Curtis details his whirlwind career reporting American history as it unfolded, from the Chicago 7 to Charles Manson to Agent Orange, a fast-paced, entertaining, and inspiring story about the potent combination of talent and luck in the network era of television. From his beginnings as a kid from Kansas, working at local radio and television stations to pay for college and law school, Bill Curtis has had a hunger for telling stories and finding the truth. With passion, skill, and just the right amount of luck, Bill's reporting of the infamous Topeka tornado of 1966 launched him into a whirlwind career in broadcast journalism. Bill also offers an inside look at how television evolved from an emerging news source to the dominating force in American media. His long-awaited book, Whirlwind, My Life Reporting the News, is out now. And joining us to share that journey is my pal, Bill Curtis. Bill, how are you, my friend?
Dave, you read that very well.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I have to say, I remember years ago, maybe 10 years ago, saying, Bill, when are you going to write a book? It's finally here.
Well, it took the pandemic to give me the time, you know, to sit down and go for 390 pages. I've never done that before. But once you start, it's your life.
It is.
All these little stories come back, and the people, and I could see the, I could smell, you know, the kind of the streets and where we were. And so I found that I could remember an awful lot. And maybe, you know, that's destiny.
It is. It is. I would say you've been doing this. First of all, happy 85th. I know that was very recent. Happy 85th birthday to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. But you've been doing this 70 years. You know, I mean, you began as an announcer with those pipes on KIND in Independence, Kansas. But I will say also, Tommy Edwards from the old days of WLS told me the reason why he got into radio was because of Tony Curtis on KTOP.
Wow, no kidding. And yes. So please, Tommy has had a great career, too. Oh, it was a top 40 radio station, and very early in the development of top 40, WHB, I think, was leading the way from Kansas City, and this was in Topeka. They absolutely had a lock on the listeners, especially the kids, you know, where you can drive down the drive-in and listen to every station that it is tuned to K-Top Radio, 1490, home of the College of Knowledge. And you listen to J-Jazz Bebop tonight at midnight. We have the Sonoramic News Cruiser number 3 or number 21.
I love it. I love it.
That we produced to you. So it was fun. Well, it was fun.
But what got you into broadcasting to begin with? What, I mean, did you recognize the pipes, or, you know, was it always a passion of yours, Bill?
Wasn't always the passion, but the pipes were kind of always there. Although we can't say always because your voice changes. It was at 16 that the pipes took a serious turn. And you had to have a work permit, so I went down and got that, went down to the only radio station in town, KIND. And there was a wonderful man who owned the station, always had trouble, you know, paying the bills. So he paid us $1.35 an hour and made it through. But he was assumed the position of a teacher. You know, this is the way you cue up a record. This is, you know, the news that you get from AP. This is the studio, the grand little thing, where we got Okie preachers coming over with a Bible, and you set it up for them. And they wouldn't have a script. They would just let the word of God pour through them into the microphone. And you knew they were about through when they would say, and I want you to pray for the young man who is making all this possible. He's in the control room. Bill, at the time I was going by Horton. Horton waved to us, and we'll say a prayer for you. So maybe that's the reason I took off.
Well, and then there, and the big moment for you. I mean, there's always turning points in people's careers, and you've had dozens of them that have made an impact. But it was that tornado in Topeka that kept you on the air for really. I mean, when you think about this, even for myself, to be on the air straight for 24 hours. I mean, that kind of cemented what you did. How did that all evolve as you were on the air?
Well, you know, I didn't know that what I would do there would really set the path for 60 years of a career in guessing. But I was in law school and graduated and was studying for the bar. And a friend, the news director, said, could you come out and do the 6 o'clock news? I had been part-time, so I could get through law school. And I said, sure. So I did the 6:30. General manager says, stick around. We've got some high winds coming in from West Manhattan, Kansas, home of Gay State. And so at 7 o'clock, I'm on camera, suited up, ready to go, ready for the word from him with my warning. None of us in the studio, which was now filling up with the people doing what they knew they should do, directors, floor directors, at a pretty low level. I was ready to get the word. And we hear a two-way radio coming from a cameraman on the west side at the city limits. That's how we didn't have the fancy radar stuff of Tom Skilling.
Right.
We would send people out and sit there and watch, you know, the front roll in. And if they're it was a tornado, why they'd be able to say, well, there was a tornado. So he called in and in Rutherford and said, we have a tornado on the ground. It's big. It's white. You know, it just has wiped out a Shetland pony farm and killed some horses. Well, that shook us, but we were waiting for the second confirmation. And it wasn't it was just a few seconds that he said, and it's also wiped out the Huntington apartment complex. Well, I had yet to go on, but I was a second away from it because we said, we've got to go on. Can't wait for the weather service. The general manager was there, said, let's go. And so I faced that decision, which would echo through the ages in my life. And it was, get them into the shelter. Go to the basement.
Right.
Stop watching television. You know, save your life. So I said, for God's sake, take cover, in a rather emotional way. We were the only station in town, so everybody was watching us. Well, they went. Now, 17 people were killed, many more injured. Biggest tornado at the time. And it would stick around, I mean, the damage and the path would stick around for 30 years. It wiped out the law school and 8 out of 10 classroom buildings that I had just left for school. And wiped out, I mean, you've seen me.
Yeah, of course.
Centers and things like that. So we, in a sense, went into the Ronald Reagan school of teletype coverage of baseball, because we were getting in reports of people who had been there, had seen the tornado. We never saw it, and became the communication center. We were calling up National Guard, Highway Patrol, damage reports, ambulances, anybody who have. We covered in a big station, pretty big. WIBW was 93 counties, covered the whole state. And everybody had relative or a friend in the state capital. So everybody was listening. It was like that for 24 hours. People, I was so moved by letters that they would send in, listeners, that said very clearly, you saved my life.
Yeah.
And it was that. I had accepted a job as a trial firm in Wichita, but it was that really turned me back to broadcasting and said, you know, this could be something that I want, which is service and using my talents, the skill, developing that. So in 3 months, sent my tape out. That's in the business. Mm-hmm. And 3 months, had a U-Haul trailer behind a Dash Rambler. Wife and six-month-old baby headed for the Emerald City like Dorothy.
Wow.
It happened to be Chicago. And to wrap it up, the WBBM-TV, John Madigan, the first story that I was assigned was obviously a legal connection, Richard Speck. So I thought that I would never get to use the law degree, but here, the very first one. And for the next 6 years, I covered four world-class trials of the century.
Yes, you did.
Conspiracy, Charles Manson for CBS News, Angela Davis, and said, well, they wanted me to come back to Chicago and go anchor with Walter Jacobson in 73. But that was quite a compression of experience for a young newsman.
It certainly is. But doesn't it also tell you, you know, when this AM radio act is out there trying to get passed to make sure there's AM radios and cars and so forth, between local radio and local television, what an important role it plays in every community, especially in natural disasters. But how important it is to have that local connection and that local media connection on the air, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it is. And that was the key. When I did the morning news and we were a network around the nation, I could finish. And on Fridays, I would climb back into a plane and come to Chicago. Nobody in New York knew who I was or what I did. And it wasn't until I got on the plane and people were flying and had been picking up the show. Oh, hi, Bill. How was the show today? So that's the importance of local. And there will always be local because right now we're the only thing out there. Of course, this was a newspaper town, a marvelous one. When I got here, four dailies going and learned an awful lot, but we're part of the community. You walk down the street and people wave to you and will stop you to discuss issues like ICE or whatever happens to be the story of the day. And because you represent them and they would like their side of the story told, you can still do both sides, but they want to see theirs too.
We are talking to the legendary Bill Curtis. Whirlwind My Life, Reporting the News is his new book. And there's more with Bill next on 720 WGN. Dave Pliers, 720 WGN. We are talking to the legendary Bill Curtis. His new book is Whirlwind My Life, Reporting the News. You had mentioned about getting that call to come to Chicago. In 1973, management said, let's pair Bill Curtis and Walter Jacobson together. You two could not be any more diabolically different individuals. You know, how in those early days did you sit down and develop a formula for that newscast, or did it just come together naturally, Bill?
Yeah, both. Mm-hmm. Two whiz kids were Bob Wessler, who produced for Cronkite the trip to China and all the space shots, and they needed some ratings here at Channel 2. And then Van Gordon Sauter, who was a Chicagoan, worked for the Daily News, and both of them put together had an idea. And the idea was, we got to do something different. We can't put anchors into a sterile newsroom and you'd be doing the same thing everybody else was doing. So they said, okay, let's put them together and into a newsroom, the anchor desk in the newsroom. It's not such a hard decision because the minute you walk into a newsroom, any newsroom, that's where the energy is. Writers are writing, AP wire was clacking, the assignment editors were yelling across the room. And if you can somehow separate the general noise from what you're reading, and we did a pretty good job, you bet yourself. Our line, advertising line, it's not pretty, but it's real. And that was the key that kind of got us going. Walter and I were not, at least separately, we were each told, well, you'll be a single anchor. And Walter, you'll be Len O'Connor. Right. And Bill, you'll be Floyd Calber. And that's our pattern. That's their plan. Well, we got together. It was March. It was freezing outside. I don't know what made them change their mind, but maybe it was looking at both of us and realizing these guys, are about as different as Kansas and Chicago. And I was straight and dull, and Walter was interested only in perspective, that opinion. He wanted to be Len O'Connor. And for the rest of his life, he concentrated. I've never seen anybody like this. Concentrated on that 90 seconds of perspective, opinion, that he would nail. He won 20 straight Emmys, but he became the voice of the common man in Chicago. So they put us together, and hello, Walter, Bill, we never talked during the day. I was the Mr. Outside covering stories because I came from the West Coast where I was a correspondent, and he never left his desk. So it's like two women who got together and say, what did you do today? Oh, yeah, well, I had a really good day, and you should. So it grew, not overnight, but we respected each other and the role we played with this rule. Together, we were stronger than alone. And when you multiply the strength that you have, if they wanted to fire one of us, they'd have to fire two.
Exactly. Well, you guys were invincible. I mean, the 10 o'clock news. I mean, I know just at that time it was a handful of channels, but more than half of the city were watching you and Walter and Johnny Morris and John Coughlin. And I've shared this with you before, but there was a time I was 12 years old and we had a friend that was a director on the set, and he brought us down for the 10 o'clock news quite late for an 11-year-old. And I got to see you and Walter in action and sit at the news desk. And I even knew at that age how important that newscast was.
Yeah. I sat in for a Cronkite once in New York, and it was the same kind of experience, because when I sat there, it was as if an electric current is coming through me and connecting with the entire United States.
Yeah.
And all those viewers. And in Chicago, that's what was happening. If you let yourself think, you realize we have a million people out there that are just tuned in to see, because this is must watch television. And we were their friends. We were the pictures on the wall. Today, the most satisfying reaction, and a lot of it, you walk down, put me in a suit and walk me down the sidewalk, and, I can't go more than a couple of feet.
Right.
Somebody says hello. But the killer is for a young kid who is now, 25, 30, looks at me, and I know he recognizes me, and he wants to come up and tell me his experience. He said, when I was a kid, I could watch early television, but not at 10. At 10, the television set was turned over to my folks. And we all sat on a couch, and we all watched it together.
Yeah.
So if they were allowing me, if I watched quietly the current events of the day.
Right.
And I knew you like I knew, the preacher on the street. It's and the tears come up because it's that warm feeling of their early years that was so embedded in their growing up.
I bet. I will tell you, and I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands of other people would say that era, the same thing, that you were part of their lives every single night. We're talking to the legendary Bill Curtis. His new book is Whirlwind, My Life Reporting the News, and there's more with Bill after the top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we are talking to the legendary Bill Curtis. His new book is Whirlwind, My Life Reporting the News. You know, at some point, Bill, you decided to leave Chicago and go to the CBS network for some time. What did you see? And you write about this. What did you see yourself from a national perspective?
Well, I was 30 when I left Chicago for the first time, and still had my law degree and passed the bar. And so I could see myself specializing in legal coverage or just a general assignment reporter. I knew I had to hit the streets. I knew I had to get cred and get some experience, because I was not there yet. It wasn't until I was 33 that I actually felt that I had the cojones to tell somebody else what I had seen during the day. And it was the Manson trial. I walked right into the Manson trial in L.A., and I was just going to, I like reporting. I was going to take them as they came. Bill Stout, a correspondent, Terry Drinkwater, a correspondent who covered the Sirhan trial, both of them, Sirhan being convicted of killing Bobby Kennedy. They didn't want to do it because, you know, it means sitting in a trial for 5 months. Well, for me, we didn't know how long. The Cronkite show, you know, they didn't want to cover a trial for 10 months, Mike. God, yeah. How boring. So they said, we'll cover it a couple of days, maybe one, and let Curtis go in there and tell us, you know, the opening statements, and then we'll break away and go back from time to time. Until the very first witness of Vincent Bugliosi, the prosecutor, comes to the stand, a pretty little flower girl of the 60s, flower dress, braided hair, not straight down, but braids, blonde and gorgeous. She looked like a Michelangelo or Botticelli sitting and just very innocent, like right in the chair. And he starts in, he said, Linda Kasabian, tell us what happened on the night that Charlie sent you kids to kill Sharon Tate and the others in her house, murdered them, bloodied walls, trying to make it look like somebody else. So she starts in with her story and tells the details, America's horror story, that people didn't have any idea, because Bugliosi had kind of saved the cult-like horror of, you know, the Spawn movie ranch. And right. All these runaway kids, right. Now whatever he wanted. And in the course of it, it's like she's hypnotizing the country. And everybody wants to hear more. She was on the stand 12 straight days, telling her story, standing up to the cross-examination, and I had a report 12 straight days. Now, that was destiny, luck, but it was probably the biggest break I had with CBS News. And it went from there. I was there 10 months with the trial.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but investigative reporting is really, really, really who you are. I mean, you know, obviously you say in the book, too, that Agent Orange during the Vietnam War, and you've said that that was the biggest story of your career.
Yeah, it was, because I was late. I had to report it like I was trying a case. I had two things to prove. One, it was well known scientifically that the manufacturers, Dow Chemical, Monsanto, were producing this defoliant to take the leaves off the trees around fire bases so we could see the enemy, fighting in a jungle. Well known that it was harmless to people. I had sprayed it myself with my dad and the pastors down in Kansas and had no problems. If you used it according to the instructions, well, okay. We had to prove, however, we were getting anecdotal evidence to the contrary. A guy in Pleiku's Special Forces said, you know, yeah, we saw the white mist come out of the planes as it went over, and it was dripping from the leaves when we were walking patrol underneath. Well, it was taking leaves off the trees in 2 hours instead of the 2 weeks that a normal pattern would have. So, you know, here it is. And this is sort of the reporter's task. You have anecdotal evidence, which is contrary to the state of the art. So I started getting tips from Maud DeVictor, who is a whistleblower. All investigative reports start with a whistleblower at the Veterans Department. And she had been getting the same kind of symptoms, no explanation. And I had a list of 12, so I started in. And there was a young boy. Well, I was interviewing a guy down in Madison. And his 5-year-old son came in right in the middle of the interview and put his hand on his knee. And what was left over was a little finger that was separated from the bones, but it was being held on by the skin, congenital defect. And my cameraman zoomed in. Photos mean an awful lot in television. Yeah. That's what we're all about. Abner Mikva, our old 10th ward, or 10th ward congressman from the 10th, invited us to go back and show Congress, or at least the Armed Services Committee, what this story coming out. He bought it from the beginning that it was the truth. We go back. The room is jammed. They don't believe the story that we are committing, chemical and biological warfare against our own men. But nevertheless, they're letting us show. The camera, 10 minutes in, zooms down to the finger. And it was over.
Yeah.
That was it. I heard a suction just come out of the room as silence replaced, you know, mumbling. They were wrapped for the next 90 minutes. And from that point, the VA gets in line. It wasn't easy. There was a fight with the VA for 30 years because, you know, it's like cancer. Can you trace the cause of a cancer to a chemical or air pollution? No. You have to get an epidemiological survey and survey all those people to find out if there are more cancer cases than not. And there were. There were soft tissue lymphomas. So picture this, and then I'll shut up.
Fascinating. Go ahead.
From the VA not wanting to cover anybody and then imposing a restriction with, okay, well, but you had to have seen the defoliant, had to prove that you were in the area, had to prove that you were in Vietnam. And, of course, that was pretty hard. To today, 50 years later, when if you set foot in Vietnam, you're presumptively subject to Agent Orange poisoning. 200,000 veterans have been compensated. 20 to 50 cancers are now, are treated for Agent Orange poisoning. So that's sort of the story of an investigative report that started with an impossible task and wound up with a big, big score.
We are talking to the legendary Bill Curtis, and we'll wrap things up after this on 720 WGN. Stay players, 720 WGN. We're talking to the legendary Bill Curtis. His new book is Whirlwind. Bill, you said in the book, television done the right way could be a force for good.
You know, given the environment that we're living in today, do you still feel that way?
I've got a lot of, this environment, you're right, but here you have tornado saving lives, Agent Orange saving lives. I do because, you know, we're after the truth. Now, that phrase is almost trite because it's been so overused and abused, battered around. But that's something that makes democracy work. What do people think we are? You know, a bunch of goofballs out there just trying to get ratings and make a lot of money? That's not it. If you talk to the real reporters, print, visual, we believe it down in our souls. And we would rather quit than be asked to slant our stories. We don't slant stories. We tell two sides. You make the choice. But it can, what if you only have one side of the story? Mm-hmm. Walter Cronkite goes to Vietnam. The mortars are falling all around him. He said, look, we've been told that we're winning this war. We're not winning this war. He goes back. Johnson sees it and decides not to run, decides we have lost. Throughout the spectrum now that we have information coming from all sources, you have to be smart. You have to be a critical thinker. And usually that means going with the big, I hate to say corporations because that's not true, but you got a New York Times whose entire reputation depends on telling the truth.
Absolutely does.
Apologize and let you know about it if they make a mistake. Washington Post, New York Times, Tribune is still in there. So, but we just have to stand tall and know why we're in this business and what we're doing and fight for our First Amendment rights, representing you. That means we're the ones who are on the battle line, and we're the ones who have to remind people. They wrote us into the Constitution because they knew political candidates and others need somebody to watch them. You know, we're the inspectors. We make sure people say what they're do what they're going to say. And we're now in a period when we're the guy in charge. Not only doesn't know the Constitution, but doesn't care. So every day we get a different order, and who knows where it will go.
You have had and continue to have a successful documentary career, launched with Curtis Productions in 1994, manifested in the New Explorers, Cold Case Files, Investigative Reports, American Greed, that we have always spoken about over the years. And you know, these deep ties you have still to Kansas. Talk to me about these iconic programs.
Well, one of the reasons that, you know, that's what I remember, that's 30 years in the making, which is the second career. And started my own company and all these series. We actually, hate to brag about it, but we're in there at the beginning of the golden age of documentaries starting in cable. We did 200 shows on American Greed for MSNBC, 100 shows, et cetera. So that's really one where my heart is. But I was a friend, the movie Anchorman, and, you know, wait, don't tell me, dabbling in humor. But I was afraid that I'd hit the end of the line and everybody would think, oh, yeah, he was the guy in Anchorman. Write it on my tombstone. And, you know, I had a big career before that with some pretty serious stuff, so I'm going to write it down. So the book is really about the first part of my life. The second edition will come up, who knows, probably in another year. But I had to cut it in two, the publisher, University of Kansas. Mm-hmm. Hey, you turned in 800 pages. We want 400.
But you can't stop. And you said you had the time during COVID. And we've talked these last 5 years that, first of all, it's very cathartic to be able to look back at your entire life story and you're almost learning something about yourself. It's almost like going to therapy a little bit, looking back at your life, isn't it?
It's psychoanalysis. That's exactly what they do. Yeah. Sit down and start your biography, because you're looking for events that caused your life to go one way or the other. It's very, very helpful, and it seems to come back magically. They're all there. All the memories are there, the good, the bad, and you can smell the streets. You can see the damage when you come out of a building and the law school is gone. See the faces of people. It's really, I would recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I want to close with, you know, I love your wife, Donna. She has been your partner in life, and she was partner in your early part of your career, and even now behind the scenes of your long broadcasting career.
Well, she happens to be the chairman of the Millennium Park Foundation and one of the three or four originators, for Millennium Park. So, and she was a producer at Channel 2 News, smart as a whip. And dedicated as much to what I'm doing as I am. So she probably deserves most of the credit.
Well, isn't working also the key to a long life, doing what you love, Bill?
We've only been together 50 years.
Only 50. And you just married her recently.
It must be something. It must mean something. But you're interested sort of in the same things. She likes to run everything, and I just do what I'm told.
That's a good man. Good man there. All right, the legendary Bill Curtis, Whirlwind, My Life Reporting the News, is the new book. Get it wherever books are sold. Bill, always a pleasure. Can't wait till the second edition. We'll talk about that, too, of course.
Let's do it, Dave. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, news is next on 720 WGN.